This is the second tape. Now, this is the second tape that we're going to do on how to count and calculate Pentecost. And you have a paper that was written by William F. Dankenbrink, Astounding New Truth. We will critique that a little later. We also have five more years of the perpetual Hebrew calendar, and we will go through different exercises on those pages. And they're made to mark up, scratch on, you know, blotch, underline, do whatever you want to. Okay? But before we get into it, and the reason that I'm going through this is because this has really set the churches of God on fire as far as a lot of things going through the church, and people, so many, just not able to understand, number one, where the problems are, or number two, why the truth is right. And you've got to know both. You have to know both. You cannot understand what is an error unless you know what is correct. And you can't understand what is correct unless you thoroughly go through it. Okay? So, I'm glad we were able to have this and go through it. But here we have, remember when we did the one on for the Passover, the rules for a Bible study? Now, we need to add one other one to it. We have 13 here. This is, and the one that I mailed out with the mail out had 14. But let's go ahead and add one more, which we don't have any chalk to write with. So what I will do is go through here. Okay? Begin with easy to understand. Thank you. Ask and you shall receive. There's chalk and eraser. Thank you. Judy, on the ball. Let the Bible prove the Bible. Okay? Context before, after, harmonized with the rest of the Bible. Original language. Key. Original language. What does it say? What does it not say? Who written to? Who said it? The time frame. Do not bring an assumption or preconceived notion to it. And that's almost the same as opinions. Past knowledge. Opinions, faulty conclusions, and let's add one more to it. Bible study aids are not final authority when in conflict with the Bible. The reason I put that there is because when we get into this paper, or not, thank you. There we go. The reason that I added that was because you will see in this paper that we are told that such a fine, authoritative dictionary of the Bible tells us. But if that's in direct contradiction to the clear scriptures, then the authority doesn't mean anything. Okay, let's go back to Leviticus 23. Back to Leviticus 23. And as I mentioned last week, the King James Version is properly and accurately translated. Now, for those who do a lot of Bible study, I've gone into the Hebrew in great detail, which I won't burden you down with today because of some of the translation from the Hebrew would be no different than the King James. But I have gone into the Hebrew in this Hebrew interlinear, McGill's, And also, I've gone into it in Rashi's interlinear. And in each case, it is very, very evident that the only places in the entire Old Testament that the Hebrew word for Sabbath, Shabbat, was translated week or weeks is in Leviticus 23. No other place in the entirety of the Bible, in the Hebrew, did any of the translators translate Shabbat as week. Let's review the words again. Shabbat, or Shabbat, is Sabbath. Now, Rashi makes it a little slick when he translates Shabbat, he calls it the rest day. But it is clearly Shabbat. And when we come to verse 11 of Leviticus 23, let's first of all review just a little bit. Let's come down here to verse 7, and then come up to verse 11. In the first day you shall have a holy convocation. Notice nowhere in the context in Leviticus 23 does it call the first day a Sabbath. Though later it has been referred to as a Sabbath, right here it is referred to as a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein, but you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord 7 days. In the seventh day is a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say to them, When you be come into the land which I give you, and shall reap the harvest thereof, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. And he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you on the morrow after the Sabbath. This word means the weekly Sabbath, and is so in the Hebrew. The weekly Sabbath. Now, the Septuagint, which I didn't bring in with me, does not use the same word here for Sabbath, which would be Sabbaton, or it would be Tol Sabbata, but it uses first day, which is in Hemera. And that is a complete interpretation. That is not a translation. What is the difference between a translation and an interpretation? The difference between an interpretation and a translation is, translation, you must bring the exact same meaning from one language to another. An interpretation is, you put your own meaning on it, regardless of the original language. Now, why would this be the weekly Sabbath instead of one of the two holy days, which could also be called Sabbath, but here in Leviticus 23 are called holy convocations? Why would this have to be the weekly Sabbath? So you can count properly. You have the right place to begin, which means then you will have the right place to end. What is another reason why this is called the Sabbath? Okay, it falls within that time period. What is an unusual feature that you have during the days of unleavened bread? The reason that this is called the Sabbath is to eliminate any confusion that it could be either one of the two holy days. Why is that? You can't have whole weeks to count it. That's correct. That is part of it. Absolutely right. But if you have a week where you can conceivably have three Sabbaths, there would be a lot of confusion. Wouldn't that be correct? So therefore, in this instance, the first holy day is not called a Sabbath here, and the seventh holy day is not called a Sabbath. Let's look at our calendar. Let's get those pages we had last week, not the ones I gave you this week. All right, now let's take the perpetual Hebrew calendar, the year 1989, which then is 5749. Okay, do you have that? All right. I didn't address this last time on the Hebrew calendar, but what do we have here that is obviously and conspicuously wrong? There are two things. I barely mentioned it last week, but I want to emphasize it since I'm going to mail these out with the tapes. What is obviously and specifically wrong with the way that the Feast of Unleavened Bread and Passover are listed here? Not that the numbers of the month are wrong. The days of the month are not wrong by numbered days. But what do we have that is specifically wrong by a Jewish interpretation? It starts on the 15th. They have completely ignored and wiped out the Passover on the 14th. Isn't that correct? All right. What else did they do that is specifically wrong concerning the Feast of Unleavened Bread? They ended at the end of the 22nd. So instead of the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread running from the 14th through the 21st, a total of 8 days, they have it running from the 15th through the 22nd, a total of 8 days. Everybody see that? Okay. Now, we know that the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, according to Leviticus 23, is which day of the first month? The first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is the 15th. All right, put a little square around that then. That is a holy day. Now, the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is a holy day, correct? So what I want you to do is this. I want you to count each day. 15 is 1, 16 is 2, 17 is 3, 18 is 4, 19 is 5, 20 is 6, and 21 is 7. So put a box around that. Draw a little box around it. That is the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The 15th is the holy day, which is the first day, and the 21st is a holy day, which is the seventh day. All right? Now, during this 7 days of unleavened bread, we have a weekly Sabbath, don't we? Which is the 17th. Now, you might want to put a square around that, but put a little T on the top of it, or S on the top, so you know that that is the weekly Sabbath. Now, what is very interesting about the 7 days of unleavened bread? And I don't think it's really occurred to anybody. There are two things which are very obvious about the 7 days of unleavened bread, but are so obvious that no one ever looks at it. Never on Saturday. No, that's not correct. That's not the correct answer. How many days are there for the days of unleavened bread? 7. How many days are there in a week? 7. Have you ever heard of the week of unleavened bread? No. Isn't that interesting? Why is that interesting? And why is that important? It shows that the Bible does not count a deficient week as a week, but it counts the 7 days as 7 days, which are parts of 2 weeks. That's why that's very important. Because this helps us when we are counting toward, when we are counting toward Pentecost, we are told in Deuteronomy 16, we are to have 7 complete weeks. So we derive from this, by the way of counting Pentecost, that a week in the Bible is from the first day through the 7th day of a week, a complete week. Any period that is 7 days is not automatically a week because it's 7 days. That's why the Feast of Tabernacles is not called the Week of Tabernacles. It is called the Feast of Tabernacles being 7 days. You can just go across the page over here and you can see the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, as you will look at it, just come straight across. It's on the second column from the left, the very first month. You will see the 15th of that month. It is called Sukkoth. Okay, you see that? Okay, that is the 15th day of the 7th month. Nothing was changed on that. But notice again, you have parts of 2 weeks to cover the 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles plus the 1 day for the last great day. Okay? Again, notice what they did with this. You count the days. They have 9 days. They added a day after the last great day. Nothing like trying to outdo God a little bit. Okay? Again, it is very stunning that in the Bible we are never told the week of unleavened bread. We are never told the week of tabernacles. We are told the 7 days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the Feast of Tabernacles being 7 days. Okay, that's important. Now, it is possible that every once in a while these will fall within a week. Okay, now, let's go back over here to the first month, Nisan, where we blocked off 15, 17, and 21. Now, if 15 and 21 were called Sabbaths in the same way with the same force by God as the Sabbath, Shabbat, or Shabbat, you would have really no end to arguments. Isn't that correct? Because then you would have 3 from which to choose. And guess what? The 3 different ways of counting Pentecost are. From the first day, from the Sabbath, and from the last day. So that's why when God originally inspired it here in Leviticus 23, he said, the Sabbath. Very clear. Now, we'll get into some substantiating things on that. Now, let's go through and count. Let's go through and count the proper way of counting. In 1989, which day is the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread, the 17th. What is the day after that? That is the 18th, and that is the first day of the week. That is the day that the wave sheaf was offered, so you might want to put a triangle around that. That way you'll know that the wave sheaf was offered. We'll put a triangle because that points upward to heaven, not intending to be a pyramid or a satanic symbol. Triangles are perfectly all right if they are not used for a satanic symbol. Okay, we're doing this so we can mark it. And I say that not for this group, but there are some groups who would say that if you use a triangle, you're using a Satanist thing. Okay? Now, let's count the weeks to make sure that we have it correct. But before we do that, let's go down and read what we are to count. Let's come to Leviticus 23 and verse 15. And you shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath. Now the Hebrew word from, I will just pronounce it for you, is called mi makarat. Mi makarat Shabbat. Okay? That means beginning with the day after the Sabbath. And it is Sabbath. It is not any other day. Okay. Put the triangle around or over the day 18 of the first month, because that's the first day. Okay? Now back to Leviticus 23:15. And you shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day, and that means on, from, including that day, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. The word for Sabbath is the plural of Shabbat. It is not the plural of weeks. Now, some people say it is permissible to translate Shabbat as weeks, but nowhere outside of 2 instances in Leviticus 23 is Shabbat ever translated weeks. Never. Okay, so why should it be here unless there is an interpretation added? Okay, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. So let's do this. It says, let's take our calendar again. And let's begin with day 18. Let's count the days for the week. We know it's 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And there, the Sabbath, the first Sabbath is 24, correct? All right, let's mark that as 1. Now, I want you to also notice something very important in counting. Notice the first day is 18. Notice the seventh day is 24, or the regular Sabbath is 24. If you did subtraction, how many days would you come up with? You take 24 minus 18, you come up with 6. You see, whenever you subtract, you lose a day. Okay, let me just review this again, if that lost you. Okay? The first Sabbath is the 24th day of the first month, correct? Everybody have that? All right. Mark down 24 right alongside in the column. Okay? What is the first day of that week? First day of that week is the 18th. Is that not correct? Okay, under that 24 that you wrote down, put 18. Then you subtract, and you have how many days? 6. See, so with a sleight of hand, I just proved there are only 6 days in a week, right? Wrong. See, but that's how cleverly these things can be done. You see? So when you are supposed to count, you always include the day you're on. Otherwise, you're subtracting, and you come up a day short. Okay? Same way as I used the example last week. if you work from Monday to Friday and your check was only good, paid you from Tuesday through Friday, you would be 8 hours short. You would notice that instantly, wouldn't you? Yes. Why can't people notice that instantly when they're counting toward Pentecost? See, it's not just the complicated things that can cause confusion. It's the simple things which, if misapplied, cause problems. For example, I was cleaning up the floor. Let me back up here. I took a week's vacation time when I was pastoring the church in Salt Lake City, and I wanted to earn a little money because I had a little project at home I wanted to do. So one of the church members, being a meat cutter, said, "Why don't you come and work for me, and I will pay you $40 a day for cutting meat?" That sounded like a deal, so I learned how to cut meat. I know how to cut a beef, I know how to break it out and do the whole thing after 7 days. I'm not exactly proficient, but at least I know what I'm doing. So one of my jobs was to clean up the floor of this butcher shop. And it hadn't been cleaned in a long, long time. What do they do in butcher shops when it's a little greasy? Well, they throw down some sawdust, and then it gets a little greasy, and they throw down some sawdust. And what happens with grease? It gets the dirt, and it gets all together. And what happens when that is on cement? It goes gush right into the pores of the cement. So wanting to do a jolly good job, because I appreciated being able to make the extra money, I decided that I should leave it really, really clean. So I was cleaning the floor, and what's one of the things that you put on the floor to get it clean? I mean, and it's cement. It really doesn't make any difference. You can put it on the floor. Bleach. So I swept out all of the sawdust and got that all out, and I took three bottles of bleach, and I dumped it all over. I had rubber boots on, you know, and I was really in my grubbies, and I had this squeegee to clean it and broom to clean it and brush, and boy, I was going to town. But guess what? Bleach didn't really do it. Because bleach, though it will get rid of dirt, is not a good grease cutter. So, here was this stuff that I think it... What do they call this white powder that they put down? So, there was this box of trisodium phosphate. And it says, good grease cutter. Never use with Clorox or Purex. Simple instruction, right? Right. I read it, right? Did I follow it? Wrong. I did not follow it. So I went with this trisodium phosphate, and here's, you know, a nice thick layer of bleach on the floor, and I took that trisodium phosphate, and I sprinkled it around and got in there and started working, but that trisodium phosphate started going into what? Chlorine gas. That's why they said, don't mix it, stupid. But those who mix it are stupid. Okay? Simple instructions, which if not followed, leads to complications. I could have fallen over dead. Chlorine gas is what they used in World War I. So I ran out. You know, got my breath, and I thought, why didn't you follow the instructions? Now, what on earth are you going to do? All over the floor. It's working good, though. It's bubbling and boiling and fuming and cutting. Pretty soon, here's all this stuff floating. So I had to gather my wits about me, and I took a great deep breath, ran back in, opened this window, opened that window, opened the other door, opened the other door, and ran out, got some more fresh air. So I let it kind of air out, and I took turns of about a minute of going in with the brush and the squeegee and hitting that thing and cleaning it out. I finally got it out. But you see, I could have lost my life because I didn't read and follow the simple directions. I read it, but I didn't follow it. So it's the same way here with counting for Pentecost. It is simple if you do exactly what it says. It is complicated if you don't do exactly what it says. So we had last time, we had our first checkpoint is what? On beginning on the morrow after the Sabbath, you count 7 weeks. So we come to 24, which is the first week. Come to 1, which is the second week. We come to 8, which is the third week. We come to 15, which is the fourth week. We come to 22, which is the fifth week. We come to 29, which is the sixth week. And we come to 7, which is the seventh week. All right? So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 complete weeks. So far, so good. Now let's go back and read the rest of the simple directions. Verse 15, you shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. We got that. What does it say? Even unto the morrow after the 7th Sabbath shall you number 50 days. So we've got beginning on tomorrow after the weekly Sabbath, 1. Then we have 7 Sabbaths. That's our second checkpoint. And our third checkpoint is to the morrow after the 7th Sabbath. Not week. That word for Sabbath, 7th Sabbath, reads this way. The Sabbath, the 7th. That's the way it reads in the Hebrew. The Sabbath, the 7th. So there's no doubt. So, in the year 1989, Pentecost fell on the 8th of June. Now let's go back, since we know how to count the right way, and let's mix a little trisodium phosphate in the chlorine and see what we come up with. Okay? Here is the incorrect way to count. This is the incorrect way to count. The Jews have a tradition. And what did we learn about traditions with the Passover? Traditions do not establish biblical doctrine. Okay? Their tradition is that the sheaf of the wave offering was waved on the 16th, which is the day after the first holy day. Okay? Now go back and find the 16th. Now I want you to drop down. Straight down from 16, you come down and you will see the 6th of Sivan, which is called Shavuot. You see that? Come straight down. That is 50 days. That part is a proper counting. There are 50 days. They do have 50 days in their improper calculation. Okay? But notice, let's go back to 16. Okay, everybody there? 16th, what is the next day? The 17th. What day is that? That is the Sabbath. When you count 7 Sabbaths, that is the first Sabbath, isn't it? But how many days in that week? 2 days, 16 and 17. So when you double-check it by counting seven Sabbaths, let's notice what you come up with. Out on the side, on the margin, after 17, put 1. After 24, put 2. After 1, put 3. After 8, put 4. After 15, 5. After 22, 6. After 29, 7. There are your seven Sabbaths, correct? Everybody follow that? Everybody have that? You will notice that it is 1 week ahead of the proper way to count. Why? That's correct, because they started counting from the wrong day, and the very next day, on the second day, was a Sabbath. That's why it's wrong. Now, let's go to the morrow after the seventh Sabbath the way they counted it, which is after the sixth Sabbath the way it should be counted, and you come to the first of Sivan rather than the sixth of Sivan. So when you count from the first holy day instead of the weekly Sabbath, you may be wrong. I won't say always, because if we go back to the year 19, let's find the year that we did, okay, 1988. Let's go back to that year, 1988. Okay, everybody have that, 1988. Now, the 16th of Nisan falls on the first day of the week. See that? So let's do our little blocking again. Let us block the 15th, which is on a regular Sabbath. And let us block the 21st, which is the last holy day, and that is on a Friday. This Feast of Unleavened Bread, there are how many Sabbaths? 2. Or 2 holy days. But the first holy day is what? A combined weekly Sabbath and first holy day. Anytime there is a combined weekly Sabbath and first holy day, the Jewish traditional method of counting on the day after the first holy day then is correct. But only when the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the 15th day of the first month, falls on the regular weekly Sabbath. Okay, now it's easier to follow when you have something to look at. Can you imagine trying to follow this without something to read? That's why I'm going to send these out when I send out the tapes. Why was it never explained before? Normally, if you would get this in a large congregation where it has been, where we were previous to coming here, you would have it all thrown to you in a bunch of mishmash with nothing to study or follow, and you would be told of the dastardly deeds of this heretic spreading these things, and you would have to say by church authority, I must accept what they say. But now you know why. Yes, that's right. Now if someone comes to you and says, boy, look what I got. You can say, come into my parlor and look what I've got. Okay? Now, does everybody understand that? Let's count for the year 1988, let's count our 7 weeks again. Okay? This time, it will fall on the 6th of Sivan. So the traditional Pharisaical way of counting Pentecost is not always wrong. It is correct when the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread falls on a weekly Sabbath, because that is the 15th of the first month. Then the 16th of the first month falls on the first day of the week, and they count properly then. Okay? Now, let's put aside 1988-1989. I will let you go ahead and work out 1990, which is this year. Let's look at it again. Okay? Block off the first holy day, which is the 15th, 1990. Block that off. The Sabbath, 19th, block that off. The last holy day, the 21st, block that off. Okay? Now, put a triangle over or around the 20th, because that is the day on which the wave sheaf was to be offered. So then you count right down, you count the weeks. Let's do that. Do you have that? 1990, because this will tell you when Pentecost is this year. Okay? We'll all know exactly which day Pentecost is this year. And Belinda said she knows why, that it just wouldn't work, that they would move in their new house on the first weekend in June. Would not work. Okay? Now, let's count it. Okay? Let's count it down here. I made a little misnomer or misquote last week. Okay? Now, let's begin for the first week, which is the 26th of Nisan. That's the first week. Second week then is 3. Third week then is 10. Fourth week is 17. Fifth week is 24. The sixth week is 2. The seventh week is 9. So Pentecost falls on the 10th of Sivan this year. Last week I said the 10th of June, but that was incorrect. It is the 3rd of June is Pentecost. So all you have to do is go over and look at June 3rd. That's when Pentecost is.